We have been looking at getting to know God by name. And that should say part 7 instead of 6. We've looked at all of the names and descriptions of God throughout the Old Testament that had the word El involved in them. We talked about all of those. Last week, we began talking about some of the names that have what is often called the Tetragrammaton, which is basically just 4 written letters. And it is, in English, often portrayed as YHWH, even though obviously in Hebrew there is no Y or H or W, but those are the English representations of those Hebrew letters. We talked last week about just the name Jehovah or Yahweh, as it's often pronounced. We talked about the fact that we don't know how to actually pronounce this word, because in around the 3rd to 4th century A.D., the Jewish people ceased saying this name out loud. So all we have is the written form of it, and we're left kind of to guess at how they pronounced it. And it's a little more complicated because the Hebrew language does not have vowels. So we can guess at an Old English word based on, you know, the consonants and the vowels, and we can make a good guess of it, or something like that. Even a foreign language that's written with similar letters, or we can know these letters make these sounds, and so we can assume. But the Hebrew alphabet is only consonants. And then they just had breathing marks that were added in at some point. But with this one, we just don't know. We don't know what sounds they would have made to connect these 4 consonants together. But we often see it as Jehovah or Yahweh, occasionally even Yehovah. Certainly Jehovah is the old standby. That's what you'll find in your American Standard Version of the Bible. Most translations actually just translate it as Lord. And that's usually the Lord that's a big L, big, all capital letters, but small. It kind of looks odd in the print, where they're all capitalized, but they're all smaller than the regular capitalized letters. So that's the word when you run across it as Lord with all caps in your Bible. That is usually going to be this word in the Hebrew. But we talked about that when we talked about then those that connect that, like Jehovah Elohim, Jehovah El Elyon, Jehovah El Olam, where they connected Jehovah with one of the words, the descriptions with El in it that we looked at in the past. And we also talked last week about Jehovah Adonai, which is the master. Adonai is master or Lord. So, and Jehovah, which even though it's translated as Lord in our Bibles, that's not really what the word means. It really means the self-existing one. And so we talked about that, the one that wasn't created by anyone else. He's the eternal, ever-existing, self-existing being. And then we talked about Jehovah Jireh, which was the provider, the self-existing provider. And then Jehovah Rophi, which is the self-existing healer. Again, so, and this name Jehovah became the name of God to the Jewish people. So as we looked in tonight, we wanted to start with Jehovah Nissi, or Nissi. And this one actually, as you can see, I have a question mark there by the banner. There's a little debate about what that word should be translated as. Some translations, in fact, the Septuagint, which is the Greek translation of the Old Testament, which would have been what Jesus would have probably been reading in the synagogues in his day. In that translation, they actually translate it "the Lord my refuge" instead of banner. Most of the modern translations in English translate it as banner. There is the Latin Vulgate translated as Jehovah my exaltation, to lift up. So this idea of a banner or a flag, particularly in In a war, in a battle, there would be the standard, the battle flag, that would be lifted up, and everyone could see it from a distance, and they could go to it and rally to that point. That was their rallying point. And that's kind of the idea that a lot of people think that this carried with it when you think about the old-time wars that would have been taking place. And it's in Exodus chapter 17 and verse 15 where they have just fought a battle, and after being victorious in this battle, Moses builds an altar and he calls the name of the altar, "The Lord is my banner." And I think that's why some say the Lord is my refuge. But the general consensus is that this word actually kind of means something along the lines of something that lifts you up, or a place where you see something that's lifted up and you come together and rally around it. So, and John 8:58, it doesn't really talk about the Lord being a banner, but it does talk about where Jesus himself talks about being this great I am. We sing a song about the great I am. Jesus says, "Before Abraham was, I am." And when he used that phrase, they wanted to kill him. And you say, okay, so he's claiming that he lived before Abraham. Yeah, well, maybe the guy's a little loopy, but why would you want to kill him for that? Well, no, he wasn't just claiming that he was a really old guy, and he wasn't just a little crazy. What he was claiming when he used that terminology to them was he was claiming to be Jehovah. He was claiming to be their God. And they were really upset about that concept, that he could possibly be Jehovah or Yahweh. But we have to ask ourselves the question, is the Lord your battle flag that you rally around? Is he the one you look to know where to go? To know where to go into battle and which way the battle is going? Is he the one that you rally to? Or do we try to go in our own way? We certainly shouldn't. We should look to him. He should be the one that we come to. Then Jehovah Makedesh is the Lord sanctifies. The Lord who sanctifies. And sanctify, of course, means to set apart and to make something sacred and holy and set apart for a certain purpose. And so when we think about God sanctifying us, and sanctifying not just us, obviously, in the Old Testament, sanctified many things, set certain tribe apart. Levi was to be the priest. Set Judah apart to be the kingly tribe. Set David apart to be his king. He sanctified many throughout the Old Testament. And in the New Testament as well, we read about how we as Christians are to be sanctified by God. Set apart, not part of this world, but instead moving beyond it and being separate from it. In Leviticus chapter 20 and verses 7 and 8, he says, "Consecrate yourselves, therefore, and be holy, for I am the Lord your God. Keep my statutes and do them. I am the Lord who sanctifies you." He sanctifies you. So he is the Lord who sanctifies. He is Jehovah Makedesh. And also Exodus 31 and verse 13, that's mentioned. In John 17:17, Jesus brings this idea forward in the New Testament when he prays to the Father and he says, "Sanctify them by your truth. Your word is truth." And so he calls for that sanctification to continue into the New Testament. And we need to ask ourselves, as we consider the Lord who sanctifies, the sanctifying Lord, have you allowed God to sanctify you? Have you allowed Him to set you apart? Have you allowed Him to change you and put you into the position that He wants you to be? We need to do that. We need to submit to Him and allow Him to use us as He sees fit. Then we want to consider Jehovah Shalom. You might actually have heard the word shalom before. That's a common Israeli greeting even today. They will often, when they meet one another or even when they meet someone who's not Jewish, will say shalom. And it basically, it's an interesting thing the way that they greet with shalom, where we just say hi or hello or howdy or something. You know, our greetings are really kind of meaningless. I mean, what does hi or hello or howdy, what does that even mean? It doesn't really, it's just a noise we make to say we're seeing someone and try to get them to notice that we're seeing them. It's an odd word. But shalom is actually a word that means peace. And so Jehovah Shalom is, Jehovah is peace, or the Lord of peace. And so, you know, that's a wonderful thing to say someone when you see someone, peace. That's a good thing to start with. Better than fight or, you know, something mean or angry like that. But peace is a wonderful thing. And God is the God of peace. In Judges chapter 6, in verse 24, Gideon builds an altar. They had a habit of naming their altars after things to do with God, which would make sense since an altar was the place where they worshiped God. But Gideon built an altar to the Lord, and he called it Jehovah Shalom. The Lord is peace. In Philippians chapter 4, in verses 6 and 7, we're told by Paul there not to be anxious, to pray to the Lord. And then he says in verse 7, and the peace of God, which surpasses all understanding, will guard your hearts and minds in Christ Jesus. Our God is a God of peace. That doesn't mean that He's wishy-washy or a pushover, or people can push Him around and tell Him what to do. But He is desiring peace. Always desires peace. And we need to ask ourselves, are you at peace with the God of peace? It's one of the reasons Jesus came, to reconcile man to God, to bring peace. In fact, that's what the angel said to the shepherds at the time of Jesus' birth. They proclaimed peace on earth. Now, obviously, it didn't mean nobody's ever going to fight again, did it? Well, there have been an awful lot of wars since they proclaimed peace on earth. But the peace was between God and those who would submit to Him through Jesus Christ. He is our peace. He is the one who reconciles us to God and makes peace for us. Then we want to consider Jehovah Shaphat, the Lord, the Judge. You know, no one can judge God because He is the self-existing one who determines. We talked about in class this morning. He determines what is right and wrong, what is good and evil. He makes that determination. And if He's going to make that determination, then no one has the right to judge Him. He judges all, and everyone else is judged by Him. In Judges chapter 11 and verse 27, we read about the Lord being the judge. He says, I therefore have not sinned against you, and you do me wrong by making war on me. The Lord the judge decide this day between the people of Israel and the people of Ammon. The Lord is the judge, and He will decide. In every encounter, we may call ourselves innocent. We may claim everyone else was picking on us. We may blame our parents or society or any number of other things that we can make excuses for why we did a certain thing and it wasn't our fault. But ultimately, the Lord will be the judge. And He'll determine. And no one will be able to question Him when He makes that determination. When He states His judgment, that's the final say. There's no appealing it to a higher court. There's no ignoring the judgment. Now, that's one of the things about our court system in the United States. I can't think of how many times someone has gone to court and there's been a judgment, but they just ignore it and go on and do what they want to do anyway. That's not going to happen in God's court. When we stand before God to be judged, whatever His sentence is, whatever His judgment is, whatever His verdict is, and we won't get a party of our peers to be a jury for us either. It's Him and Him alone. And He will make the final judgment. Are you ready to face the Lord, the judge of all? Are you living your life in such a way with Him that you're ready to face Him? Maybe we should have done that one last, right before the invitation. That would have been a good time. We'll look at just a couple more tonight, and then we'll go on. I want to consider Jehovah Sabaoth. This is the Lord of hosts, and that's not hosts, obviously, like somebody hosts a party. This is the Lord of armies. He is the Lord over the angelic host, the angelic armies that are going into battle against Satan, that are constantly involved in doing whatever it is that He wants His armies to do. And as we consider this one, 1 Samuel chapter 1 and verse 3. Now this man used to go up year by year from his city to worship and to sacrifice to the Lord of hosts at Shiloh, where the two sons of Eli, Hophni and Phinehas, were priests of the Lord. This is talking, of course, about Samuel's mother and father, Elkanah and Hannah. And so he would go up to Shiloh to worship, and he was worshiping the Lord of hosts, the existing one who rules over the armies. He is the one who has angelic armies at His command. And we think about that in terms of and we think about Jesus. When we think about Jesus as He was about to go to the cross, and do you remember what He said? I could call 12 legions of angels to come. He could have called a multitude of angelic soldiers to come. We've talked about that when we were studying about angels, how it took one angel one night to wipe out an entire army of 190,000, I think we counted that as, 190,000 soldiers of the enemy that were wiped out by one angel. What could a whole host of angels do? What could an army of angels do? And so certainly that's a frightening thought. This phrase, the Lord of Sabaoth, is also used a couple of times in the New Testament. One is in James chapter 5 and verse 4, where James warns the rich in particular here. He's warning, behold, the wages of the laborers who mowed your fields that you kept back by fraud, they are crying out against you, and the cries of those harvesters have reached the ears of the Lord of hosts. Some translations translate that, the Lord of Sabaoth. And so James warns you, you know what? When you cheat the poor, when you mistreat the widow and the orphan and all these kind of things, that as God will be fighting against you with His army of angels. You're going to be on the wrong side of that battle. And so as we consider a God who has at His command an army of angels, we have to ask ourselves, are you on the side of the Lord of angelic armies? Or are you going to find yourself fighting against Him? You don't want to be on the other side of that battle. Nothing good would come from being against God. The last one we want to look at this evening is Jehovah Zidkenu. And I promise you I'm not pronouncing that right. Okay. But there was even a little debate about even how to kind of spell that into English, either with a Z or a TS, but Zidkenu. And this is the Lord our righteousness. In Jeremiah chapter 23:6 is where this is used. It says, in His days Judah will be saved and Israel will dwell securely. And this is the name by which He will be called. The Lord is our righteousness. He basically says that is going to be the name of the church. Jeremiah prophesies a lot about the end of the old law and the old covenant and how God's going to make a new covenant with His people. He prophesies about that. And he says that when that day comes, when He restores everything, Judah and Israel, they're going to have a new name. Not going to be Judah and Israel anymore. The new name is going to be the Lord's, our righteousness. And that is, as he talks about us today. And so what is our way of looking at our righteousness? We talked about that in our class this morning. We've talked about it other times as well. We recognize we don't have any righteousness of our own. Isaiah says our best righteousness, the best we can offer, is just like dirty rags to you, God. We can't. We're not righteous. We're not holy. There's not anything that we can offer that is pure and undefiled to God. And so where do we get our righteousness? Well, we get it from the Lord. Romans chapter 5 and verse 19 makes that clear for us. As by the one man's disobedience, many were made sinners, so by one man's obedience, many will be made righteous. We're made righteous. We're not righteous in and of ourselves. We're made righteous by Jesus Christ. And so Jesus is our righteousness. And it's our faith and trust in Him that allows us to stand righteous before God. It's not in and of ourselves. Do you trust the Lord for your righteousness? Or are you trusting in yourself for your own righteousness? You know, as we consider these names, we'll have one more set of these, and that'll be all that I could find anyway, which is probably more than enough, some would say. Why are we looking at all these? Because we want to understand our God. We're going to spend all eternity with Him. We want to know who He is. If we're going to follow and serve Him here on earth, don't we want to know the God that we're following and serving? And these names that we've looked at help us understand who He is and how He relates to us and how we should relate to Him and what we can expect of Him. How will He react? How will He act? What will He do? And we can understand more about that as we study about Him and learn about His names that He's given. Perhaps you tonight are considering your life and realize you're not at peace with God. Realize you're not ready to face the judge. Realize you're on the wrong side of the Lord of angelic armies. Or that you haven't been sanctified as you should be by Him. Or that you haven't trusted in Him for your righteousness, but have been trying to do it on your own. Or maybe some other situation in your life that you realize you can't take care of on your own and you need the Lord to help you with that. Whatever the case may be, if you have a need to respond to God's invitation, please come as we stand and as we sing.